Let's dig deep on KEXE, KBXE. Joining me in the studio, Chuck Marone, our conservative commentator, Aaron Brown, our liberal commentator, and we're talking about retail stores, the closing of Herberger's in Bemidji, Brainerd, Virginia, Duluth, and what that means, and kind of looking now in this segment at the future and what now.
I think it's fascinating to think about and look back and say, what were we trying to accomplish with the malls? What were we trying to accomplish with the big box stores? And I think there was a certain glitz and glamour with it. Like, this is what cool places do. This is what people on the cutting edge do. But when you get into like the council meeting minutes and the presentations from the developers and all that, because I've sat through those meetings, I've been there. It's about growth. It's about jobs. It's about prosperity. It's about a higher quality of living. This is like the things that we are all sold upon here. Grand Rapids embarks on this, you know, millions of dollars of roads and highways and infrastructure stuff out to the south side of town to get all these big box stores and all this stuff because they say it will increase our tax base. It will lower people's taxes. It will make people wealthier. It will make our community more prosperous. None of that has worked out. None of that has worked out that way. That has been
anywhere
that has been tried. Yeah. And you can almost, you know, I think we could call it a false bill of goods if it was like one huckster coming to town doing it. But it really wasn't one huckster. It was us as a society deciding together kind of collectively that this is what felt like prosperity. When we look at the mall in Brainerd Baxter, the one that Herberger's is in, and we look at how much infrastructure was required to service and create that mall, the millions of dollars that it took. We look at the millions of dollars that it took to run the roads and all the stuff out there. And then we look at the tax base. The tax base is tiny compared to that. The amount of tax revenue is tiny compared to that. When we go to downtown Brainerd, even though, I mean, today it's getting a little bit of love and renovation and it's really exciting to see, but we can go back even 3, 4, 5 years and look at the decline and the neglect and the empty storefronts and the empty second and third stories and look at the fact that, you know, there's infrastructure there too we have to maintain. There's roads, there's streets, there's pipes. The tax base that we're getting in the core downtown of Brainerd, despite the decline, despite the neglect, vastly outstrips what we're getting at the mall, what we're getting per foot of expense we've got. These places, even with the decline, are so financially productive. And I think there's a lesson there for us. We have, you know, been encouraged for all these reasons to chase the glitzy and the glamorous and the new. And the reality is a lot of this old stuff, the stuff that was done before we centralized everything and I think kind of went crazy as a society, worked for a lot of reasons at a lot of dimensions. One of them being financial, other ones being social and cultural and human economic.
I'm going to work in reverse here. So when I was a little kid, my parents would bring me to the mall, to the stores. And the Iron Gate Mall in Hibbing and the Thunderbird Mall in Virginia, Minnesota were in their prime. They were full and they were bustling and bright and shiny. And this is when I went to the store as a kid. This was the store. Kmart was in there. It was everything you wanted was in there. And I remember we lived out in Zim at the time, south of Eveleth, Minnesota. And we, you know, my first time I ever went to a store by myself on a bike, there was an old Zim store in Zim, still open at the time of this in the it'd be the early to mid 1980s, I guess mid 1980s by this point. And there is a honest to God gas station, grocery slash used to be kind of a mercantile store, but mostly just a gas station now, 2 miles from my house. And so little me on my bike on the highway pedals my way up to the store with a dollar in my pocket or something like that. And I walk into the store and it's a perfectly cubic looking building with hardwood, well-worn hardwood floors, that kind of that musty smell, like there's been some barrels of things in the back for a long time, you know, and you walk up and down the wooden, the racks for products were wood. Someone made them and they were finished and but well-worn. And there was nothing on those shelves, you know, because it was an old dying store. And I just remember the thing I bought, I still remember this, was there was a little box. It was the only box on the gum rack, just Fruit Stripe gum. And there were a couple packs in this old box. God knows how old it was. And I bought a pack of Fruit Stripe gum with the zebra on it from the Zim store. That was my first independent purchase as a human being. And I remember even then thinking how disparate. How this is a store? How pathetic is this compared to the mall? You know, where not only do I pay less for that fruit stripe gum, but there's all kinds of other things I could buy too. And now I think about that and I think, you know, I took my bike in Zim to a store, and that's what every, you know, 30 years prior to me or even longer, you know, that store was where all the old Finnish immigrants bought their it was actually a cooperative store at one time. So it was a remarkable part of the community. It was a hub. Now it's nothing. And of course it's long since closed and been torn down. So, this is what I'm getting at is I think we're living in an era of the victory, the total victory of marketing. Because when we talk about the logic of these decisions and we can put it on a piece of paper and say, look, we can add up the tax base, the revenue from the new way we did things with the malls and the box stores versus the old way. I know you've literally done that, Chuck, and you've put the numbers on a spreadsheet and said, look, it's much more efficient to have these downtowns that are full of tenants.
Not efficient, productive.
Productive, is that the word?
Yeah, I would not say efficient.
You don't say efficient, but productive. Right. But these are good for the community to have it done this way, and yet we don't. We still push for the new box store, the new thing we want that to build, and we'd love to build it down on Highway 169, far from the city center, even beyond the Walmart, into the land of the unknown. And we'd love to extend those sewer lines even farther, despite the financial folly, because of marketing. And so we'll look back, I think, on this time at the old ads and the old circulars that were in the newspapers, and we'll look at these and say, what, you know, they really just sold it all away for this, when I think a lot of people now are seeing the merit of, boy, if my community actually had a few things you could buy, you wouldn't have to drive a half hour or even an hour and a half to Duluth or 3 hours. I know people, grown-up people, who drive their butts to Minneapolis almost every weekend for some perceived reason, either shopping or culture, at the expense. So where are the cool people in town in Hibbing? A lot of them are on the highway going to the Twin Cities every weekend and complaining about how there's nothing to do in Hibbing. Well, the base is gone. So this is a victory of marketing. It's coming from a communication, journalism, marketing kind of background. I see that the tactics of marketing has worked so well that now we can't seem to counteract them.
I want to make sure we don't descend into nostalgia here. And I think this is maybe a good jumping off point to circle back to something Aaron said in the last segment. In the last segment, Aaron made a comment of he thinks we can, left and right can agree that, like I think you said, we don't want people to suffer. I was going to interrupt and then I let him go and I'm like, I'm not going to push back on that. Because I think at a human level, we agree that we don't want people to suffer. But I think there becomes a nuance to that discussion. Mm-hmm. Because I do think that a lot of what I hear the political left driven by is we want to reduce human suffering. And when I look at the situation, especially when I look at things like this Herberger's conversation and the idea of an ecosystem downtown versus the mall and what have you, what I would like is to acknowledge that life has a certain amount of suffering to it, and that what really benefits society is when people have as many options and tools as possible to deal with and overcome that suffering. So when we look at, you know, the old downtown in Brainerd, I don't think for a second we should nostalgize and say this was like the greatest place in the world and there was no rational reason why people wanted the mall. People wanted the mall because you couldn't get Air Jordans downtown. You could get them at the mall, right? And I'm saying that as a kid who went to the mall and bought Air Jordans. Like, I could not have gotten them at the old shoe store. They didn't have that selection. They didn't have that margins. They couldn't have bought my size. And if they did, they wouldn't have bought it in volume enough to keep them in stock so that I could get them. So there's a reason why people did this. There's a reason why we made this shift. And I think it's for part of it.
But why did you want Air Jordans?
I wanted Air Jordans because they were cool.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I'm getting.
But I'm
the marketing.
But you take that over many, many dimensions. And what you see is that a lot of the things that we do as a society is born out of frustration, born out of tension, born out of suffering. Like, I want to do this because I want to deal with this, you know, in market terms, we call this a market demand. I think in human terms, you could call it frustration, suffering, whatever you want to call. It's meeting something. At the local level today, we do not have much capacity to do that anymore. I've used the example here in the past of Dunkin' Donuts. I think it's worth revisiting. Dunkin' Donuts comes to Minnesota. You want to start a Dunkin' Donuts shop? You have to have $500,000 net worth. That's their requirement to even talk to you about a franchise. What could be simpler than a donut shop? A donut shop is a counter, a deep fryer, and a cash register. It is like the lowest capital business you could start. Yet, you have to be essentially rich in order to start one. Multiply that over shoe businesses and retailers and clothiers. And remember Tom's Pet and Hobby in downtown?
Yes.
Try starting that today.
I was a stamp collector. It's where I got my stamps.
Yes. And so what we've done is we've created this economic model where you cannot start with nothing and end up with something. You have to start with something. And mm-hmm. and too many people today don't have something. And we're not going to alleviate that by centralizing more and more systems. We're going to alleviate it by actually making things a little messier and chaotic at the local level.
This is not only sounding nostalgic to some extent, but it's sounding a little sad. So what about the future? You said something about buy local, and you kind of scoffed at it because people sometimes
Well, they don't buy local, though.
That, I mean, but I mean, yeah. What?
Right. And well, I think what I was going to say is, and I was going to kind of lead us maybe to that point, is, you know, we're facing the situation now where malls, they look pretty sad. You know, box stores are lying empty in some cases. And even there's some projections that even your Walmarts and Targets are going to...
And ours look better in this part of the world than... I mean, I've been around the country and I've seen some rough looking malls and big box stores.
Yeah.
If you want to see a preview of coming attractions, like go to rural Ohio and look at what those places look like. I mean, we're still in the kind of illusion of wealth phase of this, where, mm-hmm. you know, the big box stores are relatively new, the malls are relatively new and look good.
Well, you know, I was thinking about this in Hibbing because the Iron Gate Mall that I mentioned earlier is in a state of disrepair right now. There's, I think, 4 or maybe 5 functioning stores, or some of them aren't even really stores. There's a nail shop and a Mexican restaurant and a fabric store, a Christian nutrition store for your Bibles and vitamins.
I was going to say.
They merged. They were longtime mall tenants who merged
really?
To stay viable. Huh. So a handful of these stores in this big open space, it's mostly populated by mall walkers. And so I was around there walking one day and trying not to be so husky. And sorry, I had to now we've referenced it in all 3 episodes. Yeah. I'm walking around there thinking like, man, what do we need to do here? It's this most visible part of town. You come in from the west into Hibbing, or you're leaving for the west to go out to Fargo or Grand Forks or the Pacific Ocean, and you're going through Hibbing, you're gonna drive by the Iron Gate Mall, and you're going to see a pretty sad-looking sight. The parking lot's in disrepair. It's all messed up. There's an old Hardee's that was a liquor store that's now empty, too. And you're seeing this, and I'm like, do we need to bulldoze this? What do we do with this place? But I think one of the things we see is that these are maybe not as valuable as we had hoped, valuable real estate properties, but they are highly visible real estate properties. And I think if we rethink the purpose of some of these places, we might find a use for something indoors that needs a lot of space, and maybe find, in some cases, literally tear them down and replace them with something more visually attractive that's lower cost. I think that we need to kind of think about re-sculpting our communities for the reality of our economic future, whatever that might be.
So there's a human like cognitive fault that we all technically share. You know, we are loath as human beings to give up on bad investments, bad decisions.
The sunk cost.
There's a sunk cost fallacy that goes into just human existence. If we looked at this solely as like rational beings, which I realize is difficult to do, but if we step back and did this for a second, what we would find is that not only is the highly visual mall building and big box stores and all this stuff out on the edge that at one point looked like prosperity, now looking really aged and not good. But we'd have to step back and understand that the stuff under the ground is in the same condition. It was built at the same time. It represents millions of dollars of public investment. If we're going to go in and recondition all of this, what we have to first say is that this was a bad investment to begin with. The money we got back is nowhere near what we put into it. The amount of revenue that this created for us, if we were just looking at the city as rational beings, as like a municipal corporation, and we were saying, like, this is a thing we did this work, the answer would have to be no. this cost more than it produced in revenue, and it was really damaging to our other business interests in other parts of the community. So instead of, I think, the natural inclination, which is to go in and say, let's double down on this. Let's get some tax subsidy. Let's go to the legislature and get a grant. Let's go to the IRRB and get some rehab money. Let's try to get this thing going again. To me, I think a rational thought would be, let's cut our losses. Let's put that effort and that energy into something that we know works, that we've seen work. Let's go and make incremental type investments in our core downtowns and the surrounding neighborhoods. Let's try to nurture and recreate that economic ecosystem again so that we're not just pouring our last remaining wealth into propping up something that didn't work in the first place, but are actually putting that money into reinvesting in something that would actually grow and be prosperous and make us better off. We can go around the country and we can see city after city after city, Detroit is like the prime example, that we're not able to let go of failing investments, put their money into propping them up until it just became so overwhelming that they could no longer do it. And I think that's the fate that awaits a lot of our cities unless we're able to pivot course. And pivoting course is not a dollars and cents thing. I mean, I can make the dollars and cents case to you and all that's fine and dandy, but it's the person driving by it on the highway that remembers it when it was once a really great place. And now one of the walls has crumbled in and there's a tree growing up in it. And you can't help but look at yourself as a failure. We have to actually redefine success in our communities, not to be the big and flashy thing on the edge, but the ma and pa business that's making it in the downtown, the little thing that was able to hire two more employees that is not going to have a grand opening or a ribbon cutting, but actually looks and feels like success over the long term. We've got to change our conversation. Otherwise, you know, we are on this path to, and I'll say the term again, we're on this path to Detroit. This is exactly the same experience that cities all over that are just a little bit earlier than us in the life cycle have gone through.
I think cities that find a way to provide affordable housing will be okay. And I think like in Hibbing is a good example. We've been talking about the cost of housing and rent and mortgages. We've played so much attention to economic growth, that what you describe on the edges of our towns, that you know it's hard to even get an apartment in the city of Hibbing or the city of Grand Rapids that a entry-level college graduate could afford, and never mind a family of five where the parents work in retail or in service industries. So we need to think about our communities in terms of what we need and what we're going to need. And like Chuck said, you know, some of these cases, you know, like the Iron Gate Mall, I don't think is ever going to be a successful mall. There's just no way it's ever going to be a successful mall. It's owned by an out of state company. It's a tax write-off every year for the losses that they show, and they can't put any capital money in it. There's no amount of government money that'll save it at this point. It's beyond all that. So that's why I say, you know, maybe we look at a different way to attract people to our community aesthetically, and then attract them also for affordable housing and a sense of community in places that work. And I think that's what's going to be the future for some of these small towns. Otherwise, they're going to be bankrupt.
I would put a slight nuance on that because Aaron said the word attract, and I think attract is fine. I think we actually have to do a base before that, which is we have to become attractive to ourselves. I think we actually have to work on improving the quality of life for the people that live in our communities today. The people who are laid off from these places, like we actually have to focus on them. We have to focus on our neighborhoods, on the people that live here and their day-to-day like basic needs. And if we do that, we will grow to become attractive to others. If we worry about like how do we do the big flashy thing, and I'm not suggesting this is what you said, but I think as a public policy standpoint, that's what a lot of our policies around. How do we do the thing that makes us look good to others? I think we do that by looking good to ourselves. And I feel like if we started with that, we would find it A, easily accomplishable, and B, really effective.
I meant like plant flowers.
Yeah, dude, I know what you meant.
Chuck Marone and Aaron Brown, this is Dig Deep. In our podcast-only edition, I'm going to open it up so you guys can talk about the latest legislative session.
Sounds good. Somewhere in the